and rushed the mage, Junior, who had just regained her feet. She glared at him, dark eyes dancing in the flames radiating off Ponerboner 007.
"I shoot fireballs at people, a-hole," she snarled, raising a burning hand, palm thrust out. "Not the other way around."
"Please do," Rorik grinned at the mage before him, showing his rows of serrated changeling teeth. "If they're anything like your detect traps spell, I should be fine." Junior fired the ball of flame at him. Rorik stepped aside in an easy contratempo to her attack, mentally taking back every grudging thought he'd had about spending those last 5 stat points on dexterity as he did, and slashed a quick tondo cut down the length of the mage's spellcasting arm. She let out a cry of rage, flames roaring from her outstretched hand like dragon's breath. Rorik sidestepped, then feinted toward her arm once more. The mage spun on her heel, attempting to get out of the way of the cut, her robes whipping behind her like a train. With a flick of his wrist, Rorik changed the thin blade's direction and slashed the debolet across his true target, the mage's exposed throat. Health bled from her red bar as the blood poured down her neck and onto her robes. Eyes wide, she grabbed the gaping wound with both hands but couldn't stem the leak. From behind Rorik came the sound of a dying rog. Male or female was anyone's guess. Kaz was doing well, it seemed. With a heavy fendente dalla spalla, a downward slash swung from his shoulder, Rorik backed Junior into a corner. Her health had dropped to nearly a quarter, but she took one bloody hand from her ruined throat and gurgled out something furious, shooting more roaring dragon's breath at Rorik. He was too close to avoid the entirety of the flame. It burned across his right shoulder and back as he ducked under it, draining away a fifth of his health vial with it. More red disappeared with every additional second. Quickly as he could, he lunged inside Junior's measure, running her through with the rapier. The dragon's breath sputtered and failed as her red bar flashed a critical warning, and then, in a blink, the mage died, collapsing in a heap of limbs. An arrow thudded into the raw meat of Rorik's burned shoulder, and fresh agony bloomed from his blistered flesh. He pitched forward, dropping to one knee to stop himself from sprawling out flat on the stone floor. ×2 backstab multiplier. A full third of the remaining scarlet liquid in his health vial disappeared.
"Get wrecked, dick breath!"
Ponerboner 007 hollered. Rorik stumbled back to his feet just in time to see the archer knocking another arrow, its iron tip aimed at his left eye. With less than 50% left in his vial, he couldn't imagine an arrow through the eye socket doing anything less than killing him. Rorik raised his rapier in an obvious invitation and lunged into a series of mandrito and reverso squalembrato, a sequence of quick, deliberate steps toward Ponerboner 007 that forced the archer backward while Rorik slashed at him from right to left and left to right. Ponerboner 007 let fly as he backpedaled from the flashing blade. Knocked off course by its owner's hurry to get out from under the slashing cuts, the arrow slammed into Rorik's sword arm. Pain lanced up his bicep and down to his fingertips as a sixth of his health dribbled away. Rorik's arm dropped uselessly to his side, rapier clattering away. He hurried to pull the Kaiken dagger from his inventory with his offhand, but Ponerboner 007 was already drawing back a new arrow. The archer could loose his string before Rorik could cross the distance between them, and that would be it. Starting over again from level 1, all 5 levels he'd gained so far lost to this angry little boy. A shadow flickered overhead. Rorik flopped to his belly as Macaroni dropped from the ceiling, right down onto Ponerboner 007's head, camouflage disappearing. The drawn arrow veered wildly off course and thudded into a thick beam above, while the archer and stone salamander hit the floor like a sack of meal. Rorik rolled to his feet and joined Macaroni in finishing off Ponerboner 007. Between the two of them, they made short work of the archer's remaining vitality. As the archer's health bar flashed the critical warning, Ponerboner 007 let out a screech of fury.
"You griefing son of a bitch!"
He flailed his bow at Rorik's head in a futile attempt to inflict some damage, any damage, before he died.
"I'm gonna pwn you so hard, you'll see, you little..."
Poner Boner 007 slumped lifeless to the floor in a pool of his own blood, eyes glazed, a rictus of hate glued across his pale face.
Congratulations, a player has given you a nickname, Griefer. Accept, yes or no?
Rurik wiped his gore-covered dagger on Poner Boner 007's cracked leathers, then stood and scanned the cell for Kaz. He found the Thurser pulling the sickle blade of his kopesh from the paralyzed corpse of the elf warrior blocking the exit. As Kaz did, the elf crumpled, falling half in and half out of the room, dead.
What does Griefer mean?
Rurik asked him, returning the Kaiken dagger to his inventory, then going over to pick up his fumbled rapier.
I've never heard the word epithetized before.
It is a body camper,
Kaz said. Rurik shook his head.
I need you to explain further.
One who lies in wait near heroes' corpses to kill them over and over again and steal their loot,
Kaz tried. He gestured at the bodies scattered about the gore-spattered cell.
As we do.
Doesn't everyone in Hearthworld do that?
Rurik asked, genuinely curious and quite surprised.
It's the most efficient way to level up and gain better weapons.
Kaz frowned and shifted his weight from foot to foot.
No, no, no. Only the lowest of the low would do such a thing to their fellow heroes. And no Chimera has ever done it before. Griefing is...
He faltered, voice dropping to a whisper.
It is bad manners, Rurik.
Rurik snorted, thinking of all the proper conduct he'd foregone and all the times he'd gotten his hands dirty over the years in the name of freeing his country from the oppressive fist of Merrick Konik Ustar.
There are no manners in war, Kaz,
Rurik said, picturing the golden-haired thief Danella, who taught him the art of the cheap shot and the backstab and the pocketful of pepper-laced sand.
Only the victors and the dead.
Rurik does not understand.
Kaz insisted, clutching his kopesh to his wide, white-furred chest like a child's stuffed toy.
Griefing can lead to dire consequences. Higher-level heroes might later come and grind the griefer into dust, wiping him out and anyone with him, perhaps even camping the griefer's body in revenge for his crimes.
Kaz, these so-called heroes attack your citadel every day, and you respawn every 2 hours so they can kill you again. You're forced to live a vile and tortured existence that not even your floor boss is trying to stop for the benefit of everyone but you. Griefing the heroes who raid the Citadel is the most practical and effective way of ending that cycle. If I'd had the ability back in Traben, I would have used it 100 times over and finished off the Tyrant King by now.
Rurik returned to the message asking him to accept or reject the title given to him by the dying Poner Boner 007. With no small measure of grim satisfaction, Rurik selected yes.
Congratulations! Your infamy has increased to non-entity. You are now known as Rurik the Griefer.
Chapter 18. Tradecraft. In keeping with his new title, Rurik had Kaz gather up the trap components from around the cell and take them down the corridor to the massacred stone salamander nest. It was time to grief the pair of heroes they'd rescued Macaroni from. Though Rurik had used all of his inscribed spells in the last fight, and the cooldown period to reinscribe them wouldn't end until after the Salamander Slayers respawned, he knew the traps would give them the upper hand. After all, the Salamander Slayers didn't yet know what they were up against. While Kaz hauled trap pieces out of the cell, Rurik looted the fresh corpses. He found only a handful of junk weaponry and armor on the archer, female rogue, and elf warrior, certainly nothing that outstripped his slender rapier or the bow of the fleet-fingered hunter. The male rogue and the mage were another story altogether. Between the two of them, he salvaged 150 gold pieces, wooden Oragiri greaves of silent fury, a pair of hooked swords, a book of town portals with 9 uses remaining, another 3 modest health potions, an assortment of odd ingredients, and best of all, one of those carved sticks he'd glimpsed the alms using for conjuration during his brief excursion through death. Very similar to the wooden practice styluses he'd used at the academy, but longer and tapered. When Kaz returned to the cell for a second load of trap components, Rorik handed over the Ouragiri Greaves of Silent Fury to Kaz, pointing out the 6% muffling bonus when all heavy armor was equipped to the Thursar, along with the hooked swords, health potions, and Kaz's half of the gold. That done, Rorik turned his eager focus on the odd stick. A page of the mystical grimoire opened, revealing a slowly spinning image of the smooth gray wood which sported bird's-eye burls swirling down its highly polished length. Plain Maple Wand. Durability 22 of 37. Level requirement 6. Intelligence requirement 19. Properties 0.5% increase to infernal or divine magic per character level. Properties plus 1 level 1 spell slot. Properties, plus 1 level 2 spell slot. Maple is a tough but imaginative wood, rebellious at the best of times. Only the strongest minds can exert their will over it. Magical properties of the trees of Hearthworld. Very interesting. Though Rorik met the intelligence requirement, with more stat points to distribute, he reminded himself, he couldn't use the wand without leveling up one more time. Still, it would be a valuable addition when he could use it. He slipped the maple wand into his inventory, grabbed up the miscellaneous pins and wires that went with the traps, and headed out of the cell to join Kaz. The softly sticky footfalls of a stone salamander followed in his wake. Rorik checked the floor at his feet, then the ceiling for the telltale movement of shadow. There. A shimmering distortion slithered over an exposed beam just overhead. As if the beast realized he'd been spotted, Macaroni chirped and showed himself, his strange camouflage melting away. In a fit of inspiration, Rorik delved into his inventory for the trio of raw crayfish he'd taken off the Rog's body. If he and Kaz had to eat, then it stood to reason that the bloodthirsty beast did, too.
"Hungry, mate?"
Rorik asked the stone salamander, brandishing the crayfish like a peace offering. In a blink, Macaroni skittered down the wall and launched his sticky tongue at Rorik's hand. The shellfish came away with a jerk, nearly pulling Rorik's arm out of its socket in the process, then crunched messily in Macaroni's snapping maw. Before Rorik could stoop to pick up the dropped morsels, the salamander's long tongue had snatched them up as well, gone as quickly as they'd come. In spite of the crude execution, the salamander's snack brought to mind a piping hot bowl of crayfish fécray from the Sleeping Dogs Inn in Erzbeth. Tender and creamy and just short of too spicy to tolerate. A mutinous complaint came from Rorik's changeling potbelly. Eating wouldn't be at cross purposes with his business once the traps were set and ready to go, it said. He set off toward the destroyed salamander nest with renewed vigor. Battle preparations first, then food. It took less than half the time to set the traps for the second go-round as it had the first, mainly due to their experience with the mechanisms, not to mention Kaz's formidable size and greatly increased strength. The only thing that slowed them down was a missing eye bolt, but after a few minutes' worth of searching the stone cell and corridor for the piece, Rorik found Macaroni standing next to it, wide eyes staring fixedly at the bolt, paddle tail waggling in excitement.
"If you had a nose you could point,"
Rorik said, clapping the creature gratefully on its fat padded ribs. He was becoming more and more certain that the salamander could understand every word he said.
"You're downright spooky, mate."
With the eye bolt found, rigging the former salamander nest took next to no time. They finished with more than half an hour to spare. By then, it wasn't just his stomach staging a revolt. Kaz's belly was quite a bit louder as its protests had more room to resonate.
"Kaz, I know reading's not your favorite," Rorik said, approaching the Thursar, "but we've both got a bit of studying to do, especially if we want to eat after this round of griefing."
Rorik pulled out the trade skill books and passed Cooking with Grai Feliri and Basic Cartography for Mapping Your World, Here There Be Monsters, to Kaz. The Thursar glanced from the cartography tome in his left hand to the cooking tome in his right. The plumage on his antlered headdress wobbled as he shook his head.
"Kaz would do anything to learn the art of making food," he said,
each word awash in reverence. Then he sighed and slumped forward, deflated.
Even read,
he finished weakly. Rorik chuckled and found a trapless, bloodless corner of the floor to sit in, stacking his own trade skill books out before him. Across the room, Kaz flipped the hacked-up desk back onto its scratched and dented legs, then slapped his book onto the tabletop with a dull thud.
Worst for first,
the Thurser said with a shrug and tossed open the velveteen cover of Mapping Your World. Not a bad strategy, though of the remaining three books Rorik had chosen for himself, he didn't have a worst. While many of his peers at the Academy had complained about being required to learn a commoner's tradecraft skill in addition to magic, Rorik had taken to the challenge with the same single-minded determination that later distinguished him in the Resistance. After all, what was a trade other than a puzzle to be figured out and a skill to be honed? His only complaint then had been that each student was only allowed to specialize in one area of study. He opened up The Bladeborn, The Living Art of Blacksmithing, by Batori Bronzo first, as smithing was the tradecraft he'd chosen at the Academy. The book's cover was made of plain but durable wood, and its pages were smudged with soot and oil as though its previous owner had spent hours reading it by the glow of a forge. The first section was a warning on the nasty results of heavy metal vapor poisoning, what smiths had called lead lung back in Traben. That certainly brought back some memories. Berthora Cole, the rough old mage smith he'd been apprenticed to, had spent no less than a week lecturing him on the dangers of the toxic fumes certain metals gave off. Profoundly ironic, since she succumbed to a bad case of lead lung herself 4 years later. Rorik was just beginning the section describing hammers, tongs, swages, and punches. He'd spent his first few months of apprenticeship being mercilessly ridiculed by the brawny old hag for not being strong enough to carry most of these tools alone, when a notification appeared. Congratulations! You have learned the trade skill blacksmithing. You only have 3 trade skill slots remaining. Are you sure you would like to add blacksmithing? Yes or no? Rorik accepted the skill, then immediately found the enchanted tome Metallurgy as the Venexim do, and set to reading that as well. He had no doubt that given access to a proper forge, he could create weapons to rival the pieces the heroes had brought in so far, but gaining extra skill in the craft could only help. He'd barely read 3 pages on the storied history of the Dark Elves' relationship with metal when another notification popped up. Congratulations! Your blacksmithing has increased to skill level 2. You can now craft iron weapons and plate armor and improve shoddy weapons and armor to average. Satisfied, Rorik set the smithing books aside and turned to the tailoring trade skill book, a black-bound volume called A Whipstitch in Time. As he did, he realized Macaroni had crept into the corner behind him at some point and was now curled around his back. Maybe being named after a pasta was more fitting for the creature than King of the Wolves. While he was sleeping, anyway. A few minutes' intense reading produced another congratulatory note from thin air. Congratulations! You have learned the trade skill tailoring. You only have 2 trade skill slots remaining. Are you sure you would like to add tailoring? Yes or no? This time when Rorik confirmed the skill, a strange new sensation swamped him. A feeling like the top of his skull being hinged open. He'd known almost nothing about sewing before, mainly just the basics of which end of the needle not to stick yourself with, but as he sat there, he could feel information on the craft being poured into his mind. Overlocking, patterning, leather needles, banger, frog, reinforced stitching, darting, darning, warp, weft, hang, hem, and cut. The vast amount of new knowledge went on and on. When it finally stopped, a dull ache had taken up residence in Rorik's temples and just behind his eyes, as if he'd spent too long studying an arduous text. Though he felt certain he could stitch an adequate suit of leather armor, cobble together a pair of boots, or even make a jerkin that would fit his bird chest and complement his threadbare loincloth, he could also feel that there was plenty remaining that he didn't know about tailoring. Most likely, it would take time and leveling of the skill to unlock the rest. Lastly,
Rorik turned his attention to enchanting enchantments for the modern enchanter. When his final trade skill had been learned and confirmed, the dull pain in Rorik's head had upped itself to a throbbing headache. Arcane sigils, divine and infernal magic sources, and the proper names of gemstones as well as their properties and compositions were rattling around inside his skull like a pair of dice. His mind felt full, almost overburdened. Perhaps the limited number of trade skill slots was one of those seemingly arbitrary rules which was actually in place to protect the learner from brain damage or sheer madness. Rorik looked up. Kaz was crouched in front of him, Onyx eyes wide with excitement.
Did Rorik know that salt enhances the flavors of whatever food it comes into contact with? Rorik and Kaz must find all the salt and meat, and if you cook vegetables in a pot with meat and water, then I'd...
That reminds me, Rorik cut him off, massaging his pounding temples. Open up your inventory. Though clearly puzzled, Kaz did as he was asked. Quickly skipping down to the assortment of ingredients he'd looted from the heroes, Rorik handed the lot of them over to Kaz. Amongst them were crusty bread, grilled bok choy, bush cow steak, and 3 pinches of salt. Kaz clapped his hands with glee.
Now all Kaz needs is a cook fire and he can make food!
Kaz fell silent as the room began to tremble minutely around them. One by one, the hacked-apart stone salamander corpses and the puddles of gore disappeared. The desk Kaz had been reading on promptly repaired itself and regrew a stack of moldering papers and a thick layer of dust. Rorik stowed the trade skill books, unwilling to part with parchment and words if he didn't have to, and stood. Moving shadows around the room gave away the respawned creatures along the walls, on the ceiling, and even one clinging to the bottom of the desk. The stone salamander nest was back, which could only mean one thing.
We'll find you a fire later, mate, Rorik said, pulling free his slender rapier. We need to get into position. Our heroes are respawning as we speak.
Chapter 19. Choices. As expected, the salamander-slaying heroes were caught completely off guard by the traps. The strangest moment of the battle came when Macaroni gave a gurgling bark that brought down several stone salamanders literally on the heads of the Ulm and the woman, stopping their shocked retreat in its tracks and allowing Rorik and Kaz to finish the pair off. When Rorik considered the scene later, however, it made sense. With his superior levels, Macaroni had become the leader of the little nest, and the lower salamanders did as he ordered. The bloodthirsty little monster had even leveled up during the fight. It seemed Macaronin had been an appropriate name after all. With the combination of newly learned trade skills, leveled up blacksmithing, and slain heroes, Rorik leveled up once more as well. So had Kaz, this time to level 5. When the Thurser saw that Rorik was now a level 6, his black eyes grew wide and starry.
Evolution,
Kaz whispered in that tone of worshipful awe.
Rorik can become a reaver.
Rorik was already inspecting the troll evolution tree and the prompt below it. You have reached level 6. You may choose to evolve into a reaver. Warning, troll evolution is irrevocable. Once a primary evolution path has been selected, a troll cannot change to another path. Evolve into level 6 Reaver, yes or no?
Rorik can, but Rorik won't, he said matter-of-factly, selecting no. Kaz's eyes nearly swallowed his face.
But, Rorik, to become a Thurser is a great honor few trolls ever attain. The number of trolls that survive long enough to evolve into Reavers, well, I'm not so good with numbers, but it is very rare. Is Rorik thinking he will become a...
Kaz's voice dropped to a whisper.
Jotnar! This is recklessness, Rorik. Pure recklessness. The number of trolls that become Jotnar. Kaz can count them on one hand.
He held up 5 taloned fingers, still bloody from the most recent battle, to demonstrate the rarity.
And if you become Jotnar, you will attract the attention of Azimek the Cruel, the Dungeon Boss. You do not want to attract his attention. No, no, no!
He shook his head, ears flapping. Rorik closed his mystic grimoire and tried to think of the best way to explain this to Kaz. After the years he'd spent with the thieves and assassins in the sleazy underbelly of Traben, setting aside all the noble conduct and niceties that had been drilled into him as the heir apparent to the family holding in favor of stealth, trickery, and subtlety, becoming the rogue version of a troll certainly made a lot of sense. He might even be able to unseat Ugaraz the Vile if he were a reaver. However, Rorik wasn't in this solely to take over the first floor of the Citadel. As most often was the case in despotic government, the problem with the local lackey was a reflection of the problem with the reigning monarch in miniature. Kaz had said that the dungeon lord was a Jotnar Exarch. No mere reaver, not even a champion reaver, had a chance of unseating that tyrant. Though reaching the initial Jotnar level without dying would clearly be difficult, the benefits couldn't be counted. They were the most powerful, the hardest to kill. They had access to infernal magics Rorik could barely dream of, portal spells being the least of it, and the Jotnar were the ruling class. If Rorik was completely honest with himself, part of him still burned with the desire to retake the title and nobility that had been stolen from him on Bluderich Nacht. To prove that the von Graf family line could rule with strength and justice. "Obtain the summit, or die on the path," he finally said, falling back on the well-worn Corvoan aphorism. "I've seen too many opportunities wasted by cowards who've convinced themselves the safe play is the one that'll win the war. I won't do the same."
"Then perhaps Rorik and Kaz should migrate to a lower floor?"
Kaz suggested with a lopsided shrug.
"We are level 5 now, large enough to take up places on the second level if we choose. That is the way of the dungeon. Higher level mobs migrate down, lower and lower as they grow in power. Macaroni can lead the stone salamander nest here to more victories, then follow Rorik and Kaz down when he has leveled again."
Rorik shook his head. "Can't do it, mate. I've got a bit of outstanding business to take care of with the overseer on this floor."
Kaz closed his eyes and whimpered, raking talons down his cheeks in distress, their tips riffling through the fine layer of coarse white hair dusted across his blue leathery skin. Rorik nodded. While Kaz came to terms with what he'd said, Rorik opened the mystic grimoire to his character page. "You have 30 undistributed stat points." With very little fiddling this time, he invested 12 points in intelligence, 8 points each in dexterity and constitution, and his remaining 2 points in strength. The boost to his infernal magic came with an added level 2 spell slot for his initiate spellbook, which brought him up to a grand total of 4 level 1 slots and 2 level 2s, maple wand bonuses included. With the right preparation, that should more than offset Ugaraz's superior strength. Character overview. Name, Rorik. Level, 6. Gender, male. Player class, Error, Warlock. Type, Troll Hybrid. Alignment, Infernali. Current experience, 275. Next level, 3,840. Health, 90. Health regen per 5 seconds, 14. Infernali Magic, 370. Magic regen per 5 seconds, 15.25. Attributes. Weapon damage, 27. Attack damage, 65. Base armor, 18. Armor rating, 64. Movement rate, 0.5 times speed of opponent. Critical hit chance, 5%. Critical hit damage, plus 50%. Stats. Strength, 16. Constitution, 26. Dexterity, 26. Intelligence, 32. Worldstone Authority, Greater Vassal, 2 of 3. Worldstone Authority, Lesser Vassal, 0. Undistributed stat points, 0. Troll Special Skills, Rapid Regen, 50% resistance against normal weapons. Player Special Skills, Spellcraft, class skill, level 1. Calligraphy, trade skill, level 1. Blacksmithing, trade skill, level 2. Tailoring, trade skill, level 1. Enchanting, trade skill, level 1.
Looking over his character page one final time, Rorik accepted the changes, then closed his Mystic Grimoire. A quick check of his initiate's spellbook let him know that two of his level 1 slots were still in cooldown. Their timer would be running out within the next half hour, then he would have all 6 in hand for his battle with the Overseer. While he waited, Rorik turned to the fresh pair of corpses on the floor. A quick glance at Kaz, frozen but for the panicked heaving of his barrel chest, told Rorik the Thurser would not be helping with this round of looting either. Shame. But Rorik would be patient. Sooner or later, he would break his companion of his fright. Just as he'd experienced with Ponerboner 007's original trio, the Salamander Slaying Hero's inventories were full to bursting on this plundering. Rorik postulated that a third round of griefing this same Olm and human would bring little more than experience and whatever shoddy weapons they returned with. 2 rounds, then, were the optimal number of kills if one's main objective was obtaining gold and weaponry. Interesting how a little change in priorities could shift strategy so drastically. If he hadn't desperately needed the levels, the griefing would have been an inefficient waste of time after the second kill. Interesting, but academic. He did need the levels. The gold and weaponry were just incidental benefits. He found the usual assortment of ingredients, health potions, town portal scrolls, weapons and armor on the woman and the Olm. In addition to these, the woman was carrying a blade of the sun's reflected radiance, a shining katana set with a cracked sunstone, and imbued with the divine power of +2 damage to infernal creatures. Rorik thanked fate that he'd managed to avoid taking any hits from the blade in their first skirmish while she had been wielding it. Because of its divine alignment, neither he nor Kaz could use the katana, but it would bring a decent price from that swindler Variok when they returned to the marketplace. The extra gold would help when Rorik tried his hand at enchanting. The required gemstones wouldn't come cheap. The true prize, however, came when Rorik reached the scrolls in the Olm's inventory. Mixed in with the town portals was a single-use scroll of champion strength. Scroll of Champion Strength temporarily increases strength of caster by 2 times character level, heals caster for 50 health, duration 30 seconds, uses 1. That could come in very handy. He slipped the scroll into his inventory and checked his spell slot countdown timers. 1 had already run out. The last had only seconds remaining. Rorik turned to Kaz. The Thurser's huge chest had stopped expanding and contracting with such force, but he was staring at Rorik with pure terror.
"Rorik will die," he blurted.
Fat tears dripped from Kaz's onyx eyes, and his antlered headdress shook with the force of his outburst.
"Now respawn. If Rorik issues a direct challenge to the Overseer and loses, he will forever die. Kaz has never had a friend before, Rorik. Please don't do this. Don't kill Kaz's only friend."
Suddenly very conscious of how strange it was to feel the breath being pulled in and forced out of his own tiny bird-like chest, Rorik grimaced up at the ceiling and scratched the back of his neck. He'd never been good with sincerity that wasn't rooted in defeating the Tyrant King or taking out key henchmen for the cause. He was even worse at friendships. The closest he'd come over the years were allies within the Resistance, and those always seemed to end up in one of Marek's prisons, screaming for death. It was easier to stomach seeing their ruined corpses swinging from trees on town greens if he kept them at arm's length. That lesson he had learned from the golden-haired thief Danella as well, though she'd had to die to teach it.
"I don't plan on losing, Kaz," Rorik said after a time. "In fact, I'm going to do everything within my power to win. I'll throw every dirty, underhanded trick I know at him. Hit him with everything I've got. But if it's not enough and I do die," he shrugged, "then that's the price. I won't live a coward in comfort, hiding away while people are being crushed under the heel of a bloody tyrant. Especially not a two-bit lackey with grand illusions of control like Ugaraz. If you're coming with me, choose your weapon and prepare for a fight. I'm going as soon as I inscribe these spells.
Chapter 20. Formal Challenge. After some playing around with the wording, Rorik managed to inscribe 4 level 1 spells and 2 level 2 spells he thought would at least put him on equal footing with the floor overseer. Ugaraz was a level 12 brute thurser with all the strength and speed that implied, but he didn't have access to the infernal magic a Reaver or Jotnar would. If things became truly desperate, Rorik had his claws and the Kaiken dagger for carving cantrips into his flesh, as well as an underhanded little surprise he could fall back on just in case.
Never fight fair, he thought.
With the spells inscribed, Rorik put on his oiled leather armor, stashed the surprise in one of the breast pouches, and equipped the maple wand and slender rapier of the falcon. He glanced at Kaz, who was decked out in full wooden Orogiri armor and carrying a hook sword in each fist. A formidable-looking opponent, to be sure.
Let's go end a regime,
Rorik said with a grin, trying to affect a glib tone and failing. Kaz's lips trembled and his eyes widened, but the soft-hearted Thurser managed not to burst into tears again. Instead, he simply nodded, face scrunching up in resolution. Rorik turned on his heel and led the way out of the stone salamander nest. He'd intended to leave Macaroni behind, but the bloodthirsty little beast followed along behind him in plain sight, as if to lend his fearsome image to the cause. In spite of the 6% muffling bonus, Kaz's boxy armor clacked and clinked down the stone corridor like the wooden chimes Lyuko travelers hung from their wagons. Even Rorik's own soft bootsteps sounded unnaturally loud in his ears.
Just nerves. But this had to be done, he reminded himself.
He had to kill Ugaraz the Vile if he wanted to take over the floor and whip this citadel into fighting shape. It was the first step toward becoming powerful enough to open a portal home and take down Merrick. Moreover, it was the first step toward freeing trolls like Kaz from their wretched existence as cannon fodder for raiders. They marched down the rough stone corridors, taking turn after turn, until they rounded the final corner, and the throne room's iron portcullis came into view. This time, Kaz was able to operate the lever despite his viciously trembling hands. Rorik straightened his spine as much as a changeling's spine could straighten, squared his uneven shoulders, and raised his chin, pasting a haughty expression on his face. He was a noble, a revolutionary, and he would not be intimidated by a thug like Ugaraz. With a screech, the portcullis rose, and every eye in the throne room turned to the diminutive, bird-chested figure striding across the flagstones as if he owned them. Ugaraz the Vile sat forward on his twisted obsidian throne, scowling. His black glare leapt from Rorik to Macaroni to Kaz, who was now a level 5 Thurser, capable of rivaling any of the cronies Ugaraz had stationed around the room.
"Somebody's been busy,"
the overseer sneered, lips curling back to reveal wicked teeth.
"We ain't seen no heroes this far into the citadel in a flea's age. Guess now we know where they've been going."
His eyes narrowed and his nostrils flared.
"I've come to challenge you for the position of floor overseer," Rorik said, raising his rapier in invitation.
The brute threw back his fat head and cackled, the sound echoing off the walls like a rock slide.
With that little needle, it'll take more than a stolen pretty to kill me, flea.
Ugaraz hefted himself from his throne with a groan and stomped down from the dais, the floor trembling slightly at his passing.
I'm going to rip your head off and mount it on a spike with the rest of my collection. Make it an even 14.
Rorik forced a cold grin.
I'm going to toss your head out with the trash so it won't stink up my throne room.
A page full of text appeared before Rorik's eyes.
His heart thundered at suddenly losing sight of his enemy at the critical moment, and he frantically tried to close the book, but it wouldn't obey. After a few seconds of panic, Rorik realized Ugarez wasn't taking the opportunity to attack while he was blind. Weary of a trap, he hurried to read through the stubborn notice. Getting ahead in life. You have challenged Ugarez the Vile for the position of First Floor Overseer. Objective, kill Ugarez the Vile in single combat. Reward, become the new First Floor Overseer. Command and deploy First Floor mobs. Create and alter Level 1 floor map. 1,000 experience. Failure, die at the hand of Ugarez the Vile in single combat. Penalty, no respawn. Restrictions, no assistance. No health vials may be used. Accept quest, yes or no.
The terms of the duel, it seemed. Taking a steadying breath, Rorik accepted the quest.
The box disappeared and Ugarez launched himself across the floor at Rorik. Cursing himself for being caught off guard, Rorik backpedaled.
He was too slow.
A massive left hand with meat hook claws slammed into the side of his face, ripping his ear and jaw to shreds and taking a chunk of his health with it. A right hand followed, and already the left was wheeling back around for another strike. The shock melted away in a flood of adrenaline, and Rorik realized that Ugarez was executing a modified passato with mandrito and squalembrato cuts. Excellent for backing an opponent into a corner for the kill. It had a flaw, however. Too much of a commitment of momentum for such a large body at such a high speed could end in disaster. By the grace of dexterity points alone, Rorik sidestepped the next swing and let the brute go barreling past him. The rapier whispered through the air, scoring a deep notch in Ugaraz's side, blood drooling down. A sliver of the Overseer's red health bar disappeared. Well, he'd come into this knowing it wasn't going to be easy. Time to bring out the loaded dice. Rorik touched the tip of the maple wand to his leather-clad chest, casting a level 1 immunity on himself. Target is unaffected by sucking mud for 30 seconds. Ugarez spun his huge bulk around and charged Rorik again, head down like a water bison, rampaging across the grassy steps of distant Kurikanai. Rorik tapped the wand on the floor, firing off the second spell in a flash of green-brown light. A pit of sucking mud with a radius of 15 feet and depth of 2 feet opens in the floor for 30 seconds. When he'd written it, his initiate's spellbook had declared that the spell would mire creatures level 1 through 6 in the mud for the duration and slow creatures level 7 through 12 by 25%, but Ugarez still seemed to be moving at a fair pace toward Rorik. Fetid, mossy brown mud splashed up into great rooster tails in the brute's wake as he lunged. Rorik danced across the sucking mud as if it were still solid stone and cast his first level 2 spell on himself, increasing his speed by 30%. The mud pit's sudden appearance in the middle of the throne room had surprised Ugarez, but the brute was quickly regaining his bearings. The Overseer shot forward. Wind whistled by Rorik's ear as a huge fist nearly took off his head in passing. Determined not to miss his opportunity while inside Ugarez's measure, Rorik ducked and dodged the meaty fists, flashing at his face, and tapped the brute's flabby arm with the maple wand, casting his other level 2 spell, Slow Opponent. He darted outside Ugarez's reach, carving another notch along the Overseer's heaving, mud-splattered side with the rapier. Another pitifully small portion of the brute's health disappeared. For the moment, the level 12 and level 6 were matched at equal speed. Rorik darted in. This would be his only chance to use the rapier effectively. Once the spells wore off, Ugarez would have the speed advantage once more. The Overseer roared in fury, swinging a massive hammer fist at Rorik's head. Rorik lashed out with the rapier, slicing the incoming hand, mezzo tempo, as if it were Ugaraz's sword arm, then pulled his body out of line to whip a quick reverso tondo across the back of the brute's thigh. Rorik expected Ugarez to twist in the mud, trying to follow him, but the Overseer let his momentum carry his huge body around the opposite direction. His flabby arm dipped down as he spun, and he launched it at Rorik's face. Rorik managed to snap his eyes shut before the rancid mud splattered into them, but he couldn't afford to keep them closed. He dragged a leather sleeve across his face and blinked, but the wet muck ran off his eyelashes and into his eyes. You have been temporarily blinded. Vision decreased by 100% for 10 seconds. Damn it all, Rorik cursed as he stabbed and slashed in the stinking, muddy darkness. That was a bloody, dirty, underhanded trick, and he should have thought of it first. He'd fallen into the trap of relying on magic when a handful of mud would have been just as effective. Worse yet, 10 seconds would eat through nearly half his remaining movement bonus. Rorik scrubbed desperately at his eyes, taking wide swings with his rapier Dalla Spalla from the shoulder, both to fend Ugaraz off and to give himself some warning when the brute was closing in. For a moment, Rorik thought he felt the resistance of flesh on the foil. Then, a sledgehammer of pain crushed his nose flat and sent him slapping across the mud pit like a skipping rock. Red drained from his health vial, dropping him to 3/4. The rapier was gone. He rolled onto his stomach, hands blindly raking the stinking mud in search of his blade. A foot the size of a pumpkin slammed in to Rorik's side, snapping ribs like dry reeds and driving the air from his lungs. He collapsed face down in the muck, lungs bucking frantically, desperate for air that wouldn't come. Health trickled away with every suffocating second that passed. Another enormous kick flipped him over, laying him flat on his back, half in, half out of the sucking mud. His health vial dipped below half. Then suddenly, Rorik was lying on cold, uneven stone. The putrid mud pit was gone, taking the rancid stench of tidal swamp with it. The mud disappeared from his eyes, and the throne room came back into focus. From the corner of his eye, he saw Macaroni struggling madly in Kaz's arms, snarling and trying to break free. The Thurser bear-hugged the salamander around its fat, padded belly, holding the creature back through sheer force of will. A vast shadow of flab and muscle stood over Rorik, wide fists interlaced and slicing down through the air to smash his head. In a blink, Rorik cast Fireball at Ugaraz and threw himself into a roll. He didn't see the spell land, but Rorik heard the brute roar as the double-fisted blow glanced off his right shoulder, deadening everything from Rorik's neck to his fingertips, and sucking away another measure of his health. As Rorik stumbled to his feet, his lungs finally realized their mistake and dragged in a throat-scraping but gloriously sweet breath. The trickle of red lost to asphyxiation stopped. Rorik's boot hit against something, and metal clattered across the floor. The rapier! But he was down to less than half a vial of health. Another fist to the face would more than likely kill him. The rapier was out of the question, and he couldn't afford the HP cost of casting the spectral hand spell he'd inscribed. Ugaraz, obviously enjoying the return of his full speed, shot toward Rorik like a diving raptor. Thinking quickly, Rorik pointed the wand and cast his last ranged spell, a level 1 ball lightning. The spellbook gave the odds of ball lightning knocking back the target as 25%. Ugaraz wasn't thrown backward by the crackling ball of elemental force, but it did slam the brute to a stop, his loud oof ringing off the walls of the throne room. Rorik ran, scooped up his dropped rapier, just in case the overseer got any ideas about using it. Just because Ugaraz had called it a little needle didn't mean he wouldn't be opposed to sticking a few new holes in Rorik with it. As he ran, Rorik stowed the blade, trading it out for the bow of the fleet-fingered hunter he'd taken in his second attack on Ponerboner 007. Immediately, a quiver bounced against his back. He spun around to face the charging brute and ripped a shoddy iron arrow from the quiver with smooth, practiced ease. Drawing the bow was harder than he'd expected. He was low on health and strength, and like all the men in his family, he'd always preferred to hunt with the traditional spear, but the bow was the only ranged weapon he had left. He loosed the arrow. It thudded into Ugaraz's chest, barely affecting his health bar. Fingers moving as fast as the drawing speed bonus of the enchanted bow would allow, Rorik drew and let fly three more arrows in quick succession while stumbling backward. Two hit Ugaraz, one flew wide. Still, the brute's health bar hovered above three-quarters full, and still, the enraged overseer barreled at him, huge legs gaining ground faster than Rorik's tiny ones could put it between them. Rorik drew and fired one final time before Ugaraz hurtled into him. One huge paw closed around Rorik's throat, the other slammed into his changeling potbelly. His health vial plummeted below a tenth and began flashing critical. The throne room listed at an insane angle as Ugaraz ripped Rorik from his feet. For a heartbeat, he was weightless, staring at the ceiling. Then the fist crushing his airway changed directions. Rorik felt his arms and legs flapping around like a rag doll as his body screamed toward the stone floor and forever death. Chapter 21. Getting Ahead. Time seemed to slow to a crawl. With numb fingers, Rorik fumbled in the breast pocket of his leather armor. He dug out the scroll and cast Champion Strength on himself. A burst of brilliant light flared as the scroll disappeared, turning to ash in his hand. Health poured back into Rorik's filigreed vial, sending comforting warmth flowing through his veins and renewed vitality surging through his limbs. That heat and energy morphed, intensified as his flesh filled with a strange bubbling sensation. In a blink, his scrawny changeling body tripled in size, muscles swelling, and his strength shot to that of a level 12 troll. Held as he was in Ugaraz's grasp, Rorik was in a prime position to watch the overseer's ugly face twist with shock and outrage as the tiny, sunken-chested, pot-bellied creature he'd been about to crush into paste grew into a muscle-bound beast. By the time Rorik's body slammed into the hard stone floor below, what should have been a crushing blow barely stunned him. With only 30 seconds to kill the overseer before the spell wore off, Rorik launched into motion. He grabbed Ugaraz's wrist and ripped the brute's paw away from his throat, twisting it until Ugaraz howled in pain and came up onto his claw-tipped toes, desperate to take the pressure off. With a jerk on the tortured arm, Rorik pulled Ugaraz down and slammed his newly huge elbow into the overseer's porcine nose. This time, the overseer's red bar dropped by a sight more than a sliver. Still, it wasn't enough to end him before the time ran down. Rorik let go of Ugaraz and pulled out his rapier and dagger, one weapon in each hand. The strength spell affected the weapons as well, it seemed. The rapier was now as long and notched as a battle-scarred Zweihander, and the dagger closer akin to a wicked short sword. Realizing that ripping Rorik's head off bare-handed was no longer an option now that they were nearly the same size, Ugaraz took his hands away from his blood-slicked face and produced a long black whip with five tails, the wicked elder sister of the Cat o' Nine Tails, each of its lashes studded with rusty, crescent-shaped blades. Before Ugaraz could put enough distance between the two of them to use the evil-looking whip, Rorik lunged inside his guard and spun, slashing the dagger and rapier across the overseer's chest and gut, leaving deep gashes in their wake. From the corner of his eye, he saw Ugaraz's health drop below the halfway mark. Rorik let the momentum carry his strength-transformed body full circle, then plunged the dagger into the overseer's neck. The red bar over Ugaraz's head dropped to critical and began flashing. The brute roared, and a pulsing bloody red aura surrounded him, thrumming like a heartbeat. Rorik danced left, ducked below a wide swipe, then lunged in with his rapier, prepared to end the disgusting creature for good. Ugaraz was ready, however, and deflected the blow with the whip handle, then planted a foot in Rorik's gut, sending him stumbling backward over the uneven floor. The enraged overseer lashed out with the whip. Crescent-shaped blades clashed together with strangely musical discord as they followed the sinuous path of the tails, then hissed through the air at Rorik's face. Rorik dropped into a roll, throwing himself back toward Ugaraz. While the brute had that whip, Rorik couldn't afford to get outside arm's reach.
He came up at Ugaraz's feet and scored a deep slice across the back of the brute's heel, following this with a sotomano up Ugaraz's back. The overseer cried out, dropping to one knee as his mutilated tendon gave way. A disproportionately small bit of red disappeared from the health bar over Ugaraz's head. Ugaraz was tough, no doubt, but far from invincible. That damned bloody aura surrounding Ugaraz was somehow blunting Rorik's attacks, and he had only 5 seconds to go before his champion's strength ran out. Desperate, Rorik grabbed the dagger from Ugaraz's throat and pulled it free, sending a spray of troll blood arcing across the room. Ugaraz spun around and swung the whip at him. The crescent blades sang out their metallic melody, but Rorik refused to waste his opening, shielding himself. Sometimes a little pain was worth the reward. Stepping forward to lend the weight of his body to the thrust, Rorik plunged the cruel dagger into Ugaraz's eye while simultaneously running the rapier through the brute's wide chest, skewering him like a roast pig. The whip wrapped its length around Rorik's champion's strength-enlarged shoulders and embedded their cruel edges in the thick slabs of muscle covering his chest, cutting deeply into his regained health. But as he watched, Ugaraz's red bar emptied. The brute's remaining eye widened, and his mouth dropped open in baffled shock, expelling one last stench-filled puff of breath in Rorik's face. Then the brute crumpled to the floor, dead. The bubbling sensation returned. Only this time, Rorik's limbs were reverting, shrinking. He winced as the crescent blades lost purchase in his flesh without the slabs of muscle to cling to. They dropped, clattering on the flagstones. Slowly, the tunnel vision Rorik had developed during the battle widened to include the rest of the throne room. The place could have been peopled by statues rather than living, breathing trolls. None of Ugaraz's Thursar cronies so much as breathed. They all stood staring down at their defeated leader, thick jaws hanging open. Even Kaz looked as if he couldn't believe Rorik had survived. Not just survived, but won. Finally, Macaroni wriggled free and scurried across the floor, his sticky feet slapping on the stones. He chirped excitedly at Rorik, waggling his paddle tail as he looked from Rorik to the fallen overseer, then back again. Rorik gave in and scratched the beast's bulbous head. Macaroni's chirping seemed to bring the rest of the Thursars to their senses. They all dropped to one knee and bowed their misshapen heads to Rorik, Kaz included. Before Rorik could protest the gesture, another page filled with text appeared before his face. Without the panic of the impending fight interfering, he realized that it was a page from his mystic grimoire, the top marked with a ribbon reading Quests. Congratulations! You have completed the quest Getting Ahead in Life. You may ascend to the throne as Floor Overseer for the Cruel Citadel, Level 1. To accept position as Floor Overseer, take a seat on the throne. To reject position as Floor Overseer, leave the throne room without taking a seat on the throne. Warning, if you leave the room without accepting the position as Floor Overseer, you will not be able to return and accept later. Rorik closed out the grimoire. The wet slap of Macaroni's feet on the floor followed him to the front of the throne room. None of the Thursars from Ugaraz's rule made a move to challenge him, though Rorik knew this would be the perfect time to stage a secondary coup. While he was weakened from the fight and before he'd taken control of the throne and the benefits that came with it, but they let him climb the dais uncontested. Wary of some sort of trap, Rorik pulled one of the modest health potions from his inventory and gulped it down before climbing the dais. The liquid inside was an unnatural shade of magenta, and it tasted like a mulberry wine someone had loaded down with sugar. Nearly made his teeth ache, that. He regarded the bottle, and a brief flash of text appeared. Brought to you by Mountain Dew Code Red. Thanks for drinking. He dismissed the wording with a confused shake of his head. The warmth and vitality surging through his veins were well worth the awful flavor. As the cuts and bruises covering his body healed, Rorik chased that potion with one more, topping off his health vial. Now, with enough health to risk searching out a trap, Rorik ran his hand over the obsidian seat and back between the twisted and spiked arms of the throne. No mechanisms or slots for hidden spring blades. If there were pinholes for stick death needles, he didn't see them. Around the room, the Thursars were still kneeling, though now they were watching him. Kaz's face shined, and the black plumage in his antlered headdress trembled with his excitement. The rest seemed to be reserving judgment, waiting, perhaps, to see what sort of leader Rorik would be. Without further ceremony, Rorik took a seat on the twisted throne. Immediately, a new grip